Hi, I'm Konstantin Rivkin, the principal architect in Office 365 product team. And in this session, we're going to talk about Office 365 SaaS networking. This talk focuses on some fairly high-level architecture subjects. We will try to stay away from implementation-level details. Those would be covered in subsequent sessions of this series. And during this session, we try to look at some of the core concepts of network connectivity to Office 365. And we're going to start with comparing and contrasting Office 365 as a software as a service cloud with some of the other solutions that connectivity provides to services like infrastructure as a service. We're going to position ExpressRoute in the context of SaaS and IaaS, and we'll spend some time understanding the Office 365 connectivity requirements and how ExpressRoute fits in. Again, this talk is largely focusing on core architecture and some design aspects. And before that, let's agree on some of the goals for this conversation. Our main goal is to make sure that customers have great Office 365 service experience. And we view that networking connectivity is really a means to that end. Through working with large enterprises and large distributed customers, we observed that there is a very strong correlation between the service experience that the users are getting and the networking connectivity that these enterprises are establishing to the cloud. So we are incented to make sure that the customers and the providers really understand the core concepts that Office 365 software as a service cloud requires and plan their connectivity in the right way. Connectivity to the cloud is a distributed end-to-end proposition that often spans layers of the stack. It can touch different parts of the enterprise topologies and often requires collaboration across multiple teams within customer organizations. And what we find over and over again that the key to success is really understanding the different elements of software as a service cloud, the true dependencies, what they are, and sometimes what they're not, and then choosing the right set of tools to meet customer requirements to solve the right set of targeted problems. So hopefully this talk helps to position some of these elements on the common landscape and allow you to make the right decisions for customers. When we talk about connectivity to the cloud, we typically imagine it as a multi-layer problem. Some elements of that work at the application layer. There are definitely cloud services, endpoints, and URLs that need to be considered when customers plan their connectivity. On-premises applications, their requirements on the service topologies, hybrid deployments, they sit at the application layer as well. And finally, some of the applications have very specific client requirements, such as quality of service requirements and latency envelopes that they can support. Cloud connectivity strategy typically incorporates a lot of security provisions. We're talking about network security controls, network perimeters, network zones, firewalls, proxies. As well as classification of various inbound and outbound flows and policies that the customers need to enable to support the cloud. And then finally, the most important layer of the cloud connectivity is the transport. It's the path that gets the user to the cloud and allows the cloud to connect back to the on-premise. And there are typically a variety of transport options available for software as a service clouds. We talk about the internet as the default transport option. Some customers are taking advantage of the on-net approach, where they peer with internet service provider that have well-established connectivity with a Microsoft network, so the majority of the user interactions are having a shorter path into the Microsoft network. Then, Microsoft also supports ISP-type peering with a link detailing out this option presented on the slide. And finally, recently Office 365 started supporting ExpressRoute peering, which allows customers to directly connect to Office 365 services in addition to Azure private and public services. Let's take a look at the differences between software as a service and infrastructure as a service clouds to better understand how their connectivity is influenced by the type of the cloud. We're going to start with a core principle that the type of the cloud services truly defines the type of the required connectivity. If we look at the two major cloud concepts, the software as a service cloud, with the example of Office 365, but this equally applies to other software as a service clouds like CRM Online on the left side of the table, and then infrastructure as a service, with a typical example of Azure virtual machines and virtual networks. If we look at those core concepts, we can see that these type of clouds, they have different features that in the end drive connectivity requirements that could be fairly substantially different from each other. The software as a service cloud, for example, implies that the customers are connecting to it and consuming prepackaged features, where infrastructure as a service, the customers are building solutions on top of that provided infrastructure. Where software as a service cloud is primarily user-facing, infrastructure as a service primarily facing customer IT teams. Software as a service focuses on collaboration experiences, where infrastructure as a service is primarily focused on customer-specific solutions within the customer-specified boundary. If you look at this table, it captures some of the other major differences between the software as a service and the infrastructure as a service clouds. And this ultimately influences the solution that the customer has to put together to ensure reliable connectivity to these two cloud types. Finally, if you look at the overall customer journey to establish connectivity to multiple types of clouds, we often use the term cloud-ready customer connectivity, which implies that the customer may have common infrastructure investments, common connectivity framework, which still allows differentiated setup to account for the differences between the different types of clouds presented above in this table. And we're saying that both the internet and ExpressRoute are capable of supporting connectivity to these type of clouds. They do provide connectivity to both SaaS and IaaS through one common framework, but in the end, the setup, the optimizations, and the ultimate recommendation to use one form of connectivity versus another may differ depending on the type of destination service and the cloud type that the customers are consuming. Let's take a look at the ExpressRoute as one of these common frameworks to provide connectivity to multiple types of Microsoft clouds. The picture on this slide is the same picture that is published on TechNet and is there on the Azure site. It represents three different types of Microsoft clouds. The Azure Infrastructure as a Service, or Azure VNet, indicated by flow number one, Office 365, CRM Online, and other type of supported SaaS clouds at the top, represented by flow number two, and Azure Public Services, represented by the middle flow in purple. If we take a look at the different types of clouds that ExpressRoute Common Framework is providing common connectivity to, we may discover that the nature of these clouds and the way that the customers perceive them may be different. ExpressRoute offers three distinct routing domains that allows customers to connect to these different types of clouds in the non-overlapping fashion. What we observe with enterprises is that in many cases, customers treat infrastructure as a service, such as Azure VNet components, and software as a service, such as prepackaged scenarios with Office 365 and CRM Online, they treat those destinations quite differently from the security perspective, from the connectivity perspective, and from an overall requirements perspective. As such, the routing streams that ExpressRoute delivers to connect to these different types of clouds are delivered to their customer or to the customer carrier in the non-overlapping fashion. If we examine some of the core differences between their software as a service cloud, flow number two, and infrastructure as a service cloud, we may also see that they feel and look quite differently at the networking level as well. For flow number one, going to infrastructure as a service, the endpoints that the users are connecting to are private. They may not be even exposed to the internet if the customer explicitly prohibits this type of exposure. For software as a service, for flow number two, Office 365, CRM Online are internet-facing applications, and as such, their endpoints are public IPs. As such, users going over flow number two are connecting to public IP addresses that are also available for users to connect across the internet. Flow number one also targets networks that could be isolated per customer. When the customer establishes an Azure VNet instance, they apply controls that ensure that this entity is isolated from the rest of the VNet instances and from the other networks that may exist out there. With Office 365 software as a service, the target network is shared across customers, and it is internet exposed. There are a couple of other differences where the customer establishing connectivity to infrastructure as a services over flow number two sends a large number of IP prefixes representing the entire on-premise ecosystem and receives a limited number of prefixes representing the Azure VNet definitions on the right. For flow number two, the customer is required to abstract the details of the internal network with a limited set of NATed IPs, which are public in nature. And in return, the customer is receiving a large number of Microsoft public IP prefixes reflective of the type of the distributed cloud services that software as a service provides. All of these differences typically require customers to treat those routing streams differently. And as an example, there is often an analogy with a Ghostbusters movie where the streams must not be crossed. The key design question that many customers and customer network providers need to answer is where flow number one and flow number two are terminated on the customer premise and what type of security controls are applied in between. Let's double-click on the flow that leads customers to software as a service cloud using Office 365 as an example. But before that, a couple of very important principles that remind us how we treat Office 365 connectivity. The first principle that we mentioned in the beginning of the talk is that the type of connectivity is defined by the type of the cloud service. As such, the specific connectivity type, whether or not this is the internet or dedicated connectivity type, does not really change the nature of the service. Office 365, whether or not the users are connecting to it over the internet or over the dedicated connection, remains a software as a service internet-facing cloud. The second principle is that we often see many enterprises do value the concept of the trust in the service as a fundamental concept. The reason for that is because in common security frameworks, the level of desired network and security controls is directly driven by the level of trust that the customers put in the specific destination. And the following diagram helps to clarify this concept. On the horizontal axis, we have two network destinations, the managed intranet destination on the right, and the generic internet destination on the left. When customers establish connectivity to a trusted intranet destination that is tightly controlled, tightly managed, tightly monitored, the level of the security controls required on the path is typically modest. However, if the customers need to establish connectivity to an untrusted destination, maybe it's a generic internet website that is not managed directly by the company that can serve malicious code potentially, the customers may want to have more restrictive security and network controls, ranging from blocking connectivity to that destination or potentially going and inspecting this traffic for viruses, malicious content, performing DLP protections, doing expensive layer 7 controls. The big realization on this slide is that the level of trust that the customers put in the specific destination directly drives the control depth, the cost, and the complexity of the network and the security solutions. Now, where does Office 365 fit in this picture? Well, Office 365 is not the internet. It is topologically an extension of your core services. Many customers trust Office 365 to put their data and to base their user collaboration experience on it. So Office 365 conceptually fits somewhere in between. It's not necessarily as controlled by the customer as their managed intranet destination, but it is definitely not the same as an unmanaged internet website. And as such, the level of controls that the customers typically select to connect to Office 365 is not as rigorous as the customers put on their default internet path. Now, Office 365 is a more trusted destination than the generic internet website because Microsoft puts additional controls on top of it through security compliance frameworks. It offers SLAs on the service, and it delivers some of the features that customers can use to further restrict and secure their tenant experience. You can control Office 365, such as you can control where from and who can connect to your Office 365 tenant. What type of data goes in and out, and what type of connectivity is not allowed. Now, these controls are not necessarily done at the network level, but they may be available through Office 365 application features that your tenant admins can use. And finally, accessing Office 365 through the internet is not the same as allowing users accessing the internet. All these principles may force some enterprises to think that Office 365 is more and more trusted than the default internet destination. And as the security features, as the customer awareness of Office 365 components and services increases, many enterprises start shifting the trust level in Office 365 to the right, thus drastically reducing the necessary complexity, the cost, and the depth of the security controls to place between the user and Office 365 endpoints. Now, we're not advocating that the customers have no security controls at all between the users and Office 365, but these security controls may be focused on providing layer 3 and layer 4 stateful inspections as opposed to requiring full proxied SSL break and inspect type of path. Finally, different cloud services and components may have different level of trust in the customer's view. Within Office 365, customers typically put greater degree of trust in core applications such as Exchange, SharePoint, or Skype for Business. In the end, these applications do store and process customer data. Some other components that Office 365 relies on, such as content distribution networks, may have different level of trust in the customer's eyes. And as such, the connectivity solutions that the customers put together for these specific flows may be gravitating more to the left on this diagram. The recommendation to customers is to review Office 365 architecture to study different components and flows and drive their own assessments and conclusions about the level of trust that they put in individual components and scenarios. That will ultimately drive a lot of important decisions on the network connectivity, the depth of the security controls, and the solutions that the customers need to put between the user and the service endpoint. And finally, as a reminder, many controls are natively available within Office 365 feature set, so customers do not necessarily have to build all of them at the network layer. So now, we discussed the core principles of connecting to Office 365. Now, let's take a look at the overall model. We start with trying to understand different components of Office 365 and then project it to the connectivity requirements. So this diagram we're using with many service providers that help customers to connect to Office 365 with enterprise network teams, and the sequence of concepts that we're going to be drawing in this diagram is truly important. So the first concept that we reflect on is the customer on-premise network. This is where the users are residing. This is where the customer is hosting perhaps some components and a lot of business applications that interface with Office 365. The Office 365 services is represented in this diagram on the right. The first concept that we're introducing is that Office 365 is residing inside Microsoft Global Services Network. There is also a concept of the internet that is located at the top. And then the first flow that we want to draw customer attention to is the fact that Office 365 was natively designed to support internet-facing service endpoints, whereas users who are present on the internet can connect and securely consume Office 365 collaboration experiences. So flow number one is natively available for every Office 365 tenant. Now, the important part here is that many customers do want to regulate the connectivity from internet-based users to Office 365 tenants that they created. And as such, Office 365 provides a number of features that allow customers to restrict or block this type of connectivity over flow number one. Now, it's important to know that these type of blocks are implemented at the service and at the application level, and not necessarily purely at the network level that the customer controls. The second flow is flow number two. These type of flows go from the on-premise environment to Office 365. And again, by default, Office 365 was created as the internet-facing software as a service application, and all features that Office 365 has today and will have in the future are available over the internet. Finally, in order to consume Office 365 services, customers must have internet connectivity from their on-premise environment. There are a number of Office 365 dependencies that rely on flow number three. The example here is DNS name resolution. Every Office 365 resource, service, or URL needs to be resolved in the Internet Public DNS. Another example of set of services or dependencies that the customer needs to exercise flow number 3 for is content distribution networks, where Office 365 components may rely on content distribution networks to deliver static content-like images to speed up the user UI experience. And another example why flow number 3 may be required is certificate revocation lists to ensure that the connection over TLS encrypted sessions is validated and the certificates being used are not revoked or compromised. So flows number 1, 2, and 3 are critical to understand the customer connectivity requirements from on-premise into Office 365 cloud. Now, after we understand these type of dependencies, only then we're introducing another option that allows customers to directly connect their on-premise environment, their users, to Office 365 services. Flow number 4, which is representative of the direct connectivity. This is where ExpressRoute for Office 365 fits in. And the important notion here is that flow number 4 allows customers to gravitate some, but not all, of flows number 2 from their internet into the direct connection. Flow number 2 may account for connections that are going to core Office 365 services, such as Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, or Skype for Business. But flow number 2 also accounts for services that represent critical Office 365 dependencies, such as Office Pro Plus. ExpressRoute, a flavor of direct connectivity for Office 365, supports a subset of Office 365 services. So the blue part of flow number 2, representing perhaps the majority of bandwidth or the majority of the customer data transactions, could be offered an alternate routing path over the direct connectivity. But even with a full deployment of Office 365 ExpressRoute, flow number 2, some portion of it is still going to be required. So the key message here is that customers are encouraged to look at the Office 365 connectivity end-to-end and really take into account all flows represented in this diagram. Finally, to complete the picture, Office 365 is being treated as the external network from the custom on-premise perspective. As such, irrespectively which path the users take to reach Office 365, customers are encouraged to have network and security controls along that path that are tuned in accordance to the level of trust that the customers are putting in the specific destination. For example, when the customers are connecting to internet dependencies of Office 365 over flow number 3, they may choose to use the default internet security controls, such as stateful firewalls and perhaps proxies. However, when the customers are connecting to Office 365 services over flow 2 or over flow 4, Office 365 services that reside inside Microsoft network that are well-defined from the URL and IP address perspective that store and handle customer data, customers may treat those with different level of trust and thus fine-tune the level of security and network controls that reside over those two paths. The last key points that I want to mention in this diagram is that Office 365 services for flow number 4 is only a subset of flow number 2. Customers who are interested in detailing out which specific Office 365 services are supported over ExpressRoute dedicated connectivity, for these customers we provide a pointer to their online resource that details out every Office 365 scenario from the URL IP perspective and the supportability over the ExpressRoute connection. And finally, Office 365 experience comes from many places. Thus, every flow pictured in this diagram is important, and the user experience with Office 365 is a combination of connections over 1, 2, 3, and optionally 4. Now let's start using that diagram and highlight some important key considerations of using Office 365 in the ExpressRoute context. First, the starting point is always flow number 1, flow number 2, and flow number 3, and having a detailed discussion with the customer on how these specific flows are architected, handled, and secured. Office 365 services are optimized for internet-based delivery and thus require all these three flows even if ExpressRoute is put in place. ExpressRoute architecturally offers an alternate network path over flow number 4, and it supports a subset of Office 365 flows. This architecture proposition is based on the dynamic BGP advertisements of their Office 365 subnets that are already available and advertised on the internet. This framework allows customers and the customer network teams to design a more preferred connectivity path. Some people call it a lower cost routing path into Office 365 services. And architecturally, from the on-premises network, ExpressRoute represents a dynamic path override, effectively offering users an override path from the default internet egress into the same set of services, same set of IPs on the right part of this diagram. This dynamic path override could be implemented at layer 3 with the lowest overhead from the processing perspective on the customer side, or some customers are exercising a layer 7 override via a variety of proxying solutions. Either way, ExpressRoute offers the alternate path and architecturally fits as the path override into this diagram with all the consequences that this type of architecture brings to the table. So let's review some of the other key dependencies. The first one is that connectivity path does not really change the nature of the service that it connects to. We started this talk with this principle. Now let's take a look at what it actually means. Office 365 remains the publicly facing, internet-facing application, even if users are accessing it over the dedicated path such as ExpressRoute. As such, all the URLs, all the IP addresses of core Office 365 services available over ExpressRoute are exactly the same as if the users are accessing it from their internet or through the internet. The second important key consideration in this slide is that Office 365 is a global service. This is a mistake that, unfortunately, many customers are making, assuming that the tenant location, which largely defines a concept of the data at rest, also contains and determines the set of network flows and their locations that the users need to exercise to connect to that tenant. In reality, user collaboration experiences with Office 365 Distributed Cloud may direct users to service endpoints outside of the user or customer tenant locations. For example, if the customer provisioned their tenant in North America, but the user is accessing that tenant from Europe, the user may be and likely will be directed to a set of service endpoints in a Europe region. And as such, the connectivity from the user perspective need to be provided to the full spectrum of Office 365 front doors or endpoints, irrespectively of the customer tenant location, irrespectively of their actual geographical presence. As a consequence from that, ExpressRoute for Office 365 requires a premium SKU to ensure that this type of global connectivity is provided. The third principle on this slide is that Office 365 relies on both inbound and outbound flows. So let's define these a little bit. Outbound flow from the customer perspective is when the connection is initiated from within the customer network and is going or being directed to the cloud. The inbound connection is where the cloud initiates the connection that is going to one or more on-premises endpoints. The reason why this may be important is because both types of these flows need to be carefully planned within this overall architectural diagram and the topology. And what we see very often that customers do treat inbound and outbound flows with a different degree of trust. Outbound flows from the customer on-premise are typically handled with greater degree of trust because they are initiated from a tighter controlled part of the topology, the user desktops or the internal on-premises servers that the customer can tightly manage. The inbound flows are initiated from the outside, from the customer perspective network, and as such, customer network and security teams may want to treat them with great amount of scrutiny. But the important part is that for Office 365 reliable experience, both of these flows need to be carefully planned and overlaid with that picture. Let's take a look at some of their examples of their inbound flows. This is a popular customer question and a popular question that the customer security teams are often asking. So inbound traffic is when the endpoints that you configure on-premises are being reached by Office 365. Office 365 are establishing inbound connections into your network. There are many examples where these inbound flows are required. Let's name a few of them. The first type of inbound flows is going from Office 365 into on-premises ADFS or SDS infrastructure. And this flow is primarily used for credential validation for clients that don't support federated authentication natively. In this example, when the client connects to Office 365 and presents the credentials, and such client is not capable of supporting federated authentication natively, Office 365 needs to validate these credentials by relaying the requests to the on-premise ADFS SDS system. This type of flow is a classical example of inbound connection from the cloud to on-premise. Exchange hybrid deployments, starting with mailbox migration and calendaring information sharing between the cloud and on-premise, also relies on the inbound flows. Email exchange from Exchange Online and SharePoint Online with the on-premise email systems. A SharePoint Federated Search, Skype Hybrid and Business Federation, as well as Skype for Business Cloud Connector. These type of scenarios all imply that the cloud needs to initiate connectivity into the custom on-premise. Now, why are we discussing these with extra scrutiny? Customers told us that inbound flows are of critical importance. They need to be more carefully planned, and they generally present higher risk to customers of breaking if ExpressRoute is enabled and the end-to-end topology requirements are not met. So if your Office 365 features and scenarios do include inbound flow dependencies, which they likely are, planning for inbound flows and fitting them explicitly into your ExpressRoute planning framework is critical to the overall health of Office 365 experience. Adding inbound flows is generally more complex, and additional requirements apply on top of the standard ExpressRoute requirements. And as such, our default recommendation is to start with inbound flows going across the internet and only use only shift them into the ExpressRoute framework if absolutely necessary. All right, so let's pop back up and look at the architectural diagram again and discuss a couple of other important considerations. The presence of both flow number 2 and flow number 4 between the on-premise user and the set of Office 365 services on the right represents the routing path duality between the customer network and the Microsoft network. As such, from the routing perspective, there are two alternate paths that the request can take over flow number 2 or over flow number 4. And this imposes a common networking challenge, often referred to as path asymmetry. In our enterprise experiences with onboarding customers to ExpressRoute for Office 365, we observed that path asymmetry represents one of the most common and painful failure modes, where customers enabling ExpressRoute, establishing a set of services that they want to access over flow number 4, and breaking their symmetry of these flows, these services become effectively inaccessible. So, planning for path symmetry and driving explicit designs to make sure that this is accounted for in the overall plan is of critical importance to ensure that ExpressRoute for Office 365 deployment is a success for your customers. Another important consideration in this slide is the fact that the enterprise customer and Microsoft networks are, in general sense, both distributed. Office 365 is instantiated in every major data center worldwide that Microsoft has. And we expect that the majority of the enterprise networks have users located around the globe as well. So their planning effort of establishing connectivity either via the public internet or over the ExpressRoute is really a path latency equation that needs to be looked as their M by M matrix, where M is the number of Office 365 geographic locations and N is the number of locations where the customer users may be. So as you can imagine, solving such equation and optimizing for end-to-end latency for performance may be a difficult exercise. And in many enterprise deployments, we discover that the optimal path that guarantees the best latency experience to the service is not necessarily going through ExpressRoute alone. Many enterprises chose to leverage ExpressRoute for some of their user locations, but not another. And the framework definitely supports this motion, but this needs to be very carefully planned. Another key consideration on this slide is the fact that having ExpressRoute as the part of the toolset that enterprise choose to enable must not reduce their availability of the end service. High availability considerations should include both in mean time between failures, mean time to recover, and the blast radius for the full spectrum of both micro and macro fail modes. We're trying to discourage customers to provision a single express route circuit in a single peering location and base the entirety of the Office 365 experience based on that. A single express route circuit for Office 365 for the entire enterprise represents a single point of failure and generally results in lower availability of Office 365 services to the end users. So customer topology designs for ExpressRoute must not reduce the end-to-end service availability, and thus the high availability considerations need to be explicitly factored in the overall topology. I want to spend a couple of minutes outlining the path symmetry challenge. Other talks in the series will deep dive into a variety of path symmetry scenarios, but I thought I would mention a specific flavor of the path symmetry associated with outbound flows and the inbound flows, because in our experience, that's one of the common failure modes of a large enterprise onboarding to Office 365 over ExpressRoute. So this is a slightly expanded diagram where the customer on-premise is still located on the left, and the Office 365 and other Microsoft services are located in the right part of this diagram. ExpressRoute, following their high availability considerations, has peering locations in two geographic regions, offering two independent dedicated paths over ExpressRoute, path B and C. And finally, as we discussed, internet connectivity is also required, so path A also exists. So the path symmetry challenge comes when the user requests from on-premise, from point number one, are reaching out to services on the Microsoft network, such as Office 365 front door infrastructure, point number two, and this connection is gravitated over a certain path, let's say path C over ExpressRoute. We must ensure that the return connection is also going through the same path. Otherwise, the stateful network security devices, such as firewalls, will deny that connection and the user communication breaks. The same applies for services that are not part of the Office 365 service umbrella, but they still reside on the Microsoft network. The example of such services could be Hotmail or Xbox. If the user from point number one is connecting to these other services over floor number three, this connection goes over path A because these services are only available over the internet. The return path must also go across the internet. The way to solve that is to ensure that the customer explicitly plans the set of IP advertisements and explicitly the network address translation devices along the path. The specific best practice for outbound flows is that the NAT IPs, the pool of IP addresses used for different NAT infrastructures along this diagram, over path C, B, and A are unique and they're not advertised over other paths that they don't serve. For inbound flows, the equation to solve the path symmetry may be even more complex. The overarching goal is to ensure that when Office 365 services reach out into the customer on-premise, the responses for these requests flow through the exactly same path. So if Office 365 Exchange service, for example, reaches out to a customer hybrid exchange service on-premise, point number four, and this connection is routed over ExpressRoute path B, the response traffic must also flow through path B and not A or C, otherwise the path's asymmetry will result in the connection flow break. A popular way to solve this particular challenge is to ensure that the source NAT is applied for connections originating from Microsoft into the custom on-premise environment as well. And this source NAT is unique per circuit or per connection point that these connections are going through. That ensures that the return traffic is going through exactly the same path as the original request went through. In all these conversations around ExpressRoute and network address translations, we imply that NAT concept focuses on the source IP address translation framework. When the IP packet crosses the NAT, in this context, the source IP addresses change, while the destination IP address remains exactly the same. We finish this talk with some of the design considerations for ExpressRoute for Office 365. Subsequent sessions will deep dive into some of these concepts, but we wanted to put this on one common list to help customers plan the overall effort end-to-end. The first important principle for express route planning is start with an explicit problem statement and design goals based on requirements. We spoke previously that some of these requirements may not necessarily be met by express route, or customer may be able to meet similar requirements with solutions over the internet path. The second principle here is that implementation project is generally required for any express route connectivity to Office 365. We encourage customers to plan for service access to be split between express route and the internet. The routing path duality that we discussed before could be a major complication, so a proper plan needs to be put in place to combat that. Plan for client LAN routing, including client proxy files, default route, proxy servers, explicit route advertisements. We're trying to position Express Route Challenge for Office 365 as an end-to-end customer proposition, as an end-to-end challenge that requires end-to-end optimizations as opposed to focusing it on just the interconnect services. Plan and design the depth and the breadth of propagation of IP prefixes. Express Route allows customers to consume IP prefixes defining Office 365 services through Microsoft peering part of Express Route. But still, the customer network team or your network service provider has to decide how broad and how deep these IP prefixes should be propagated to influence the routing over the Express Route alternate path. And finally, having Express Route does not eliminate the necessity of planning for bandwidth, security, high availability, and failover strategy along these type of redundant connections. We also encourage customers to plan deployments in detail, a plan for network cutovers, which in many cases may result in some planned downtime. Stage the network and service onboarding, correlated with the plan to ramp up your usage of Office 365 in general, and include testing and rollback plans. Finally, we cannot stress the importance of asynchronous route preparation strategy, or basically figuring out the exact design patterns to solve the route symmetry problem. We outlined some of the best practices, like using the snatting along every connection from on-premise users to Microsoft and vice versa, and not using the same NAT pool for internet and express route connection mode. So some of these design considerations need to be explicitly incorporated into your express route planning for Office 365. So in this session, we touched on a number of important topics. It was important, we thought, to look at the connectivity strategy to Office 365 in general, outline some of its key dependencies, compare and contrast the software as a service connectivity requirements to infrastructure as a service so that we avoid any type of false correlation or confusion. We positioned Express Route in the overall Office 365 connectivity landscape, and we stressed that even with Express Route, Office 365 requires customers to have internet connectivity. Inbound and outbound flows need to be explicitly planned, sometimes separately, and we walk through the reasons why. And finally, we spend some time looking at the key challenges and the considerations. So the next couple of sessions in this series will deep dive into the implementation level details on some of these subjects. Well, with that, I want to thank you very much for your attention. Hopefully this material was interesting. Have a good day.